TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness.
Matt Simon, Microplastics Everywhere, in Water, Land, and Air. Hosted by the Surfrider Foundation, San Diego, in January 2024. Matt Simon is the author of the book, A Poison Like No Other, How Microplastics Corrupted Our Planet and Our Bodies. He traces how the plastic we are using and discarding breaks into ever smaller pieces that poison water, soil, and the atmosphere. Scientists have found microplastics in the deepest ocean trenches and in snow off the North and South Poles. They are in our food, and from there travel through our bodies. And most plastic is made from a mix of toxic petrochemicals. Here is Matt Simon, welcomed by the Surfrider Foundation. They work to protect and preserve the world's oceans.
Thank you very much for having me. It's an honor and pleasure to be here. Yes, microplastics. This is going to be a bit heavy, forewarning. It'll be hopeful at the end, I promise you that. I think it's important that we, first of all, talk about some definitions. We are all very familiar with macroplastic, the big stuff, the bottles and the bags, macro with an A. A macroplastic breaks down over time, and it is classified in science, a microplastic when it gets smaller than 5 millimeters, and that is about the width of a pencil eraser. So the largest of microplastics you can actually see with your naked eye, but they do get much, much smaller. So over time, they break into smaller and smaller bits and eventually get down into the nanoscale. So we now have this thing to contend with called nanoplastic, typically defined as smaller than a micron, so a millionth of a meter, which is obviously way too small to see with the human eye. But that is now getting down to the scale where they can not only just get into our bodies, but can actually break into individual cells. So we have probably here all seen images from beaches. Think of a bottle or a bag, any other kind of plastic floating around on the open ocean as pre-microplastic. It will break down over time into a galaxy of smaller particles. So we have to worry, first of all, not only about the particles themselves, what they can do when they can get into essentially every creature on the planet at this point. That's how widespread they are. But what the chemicals are inside of them. So this was a study that a couple of years ago found that at least 10,500 different chemicals have been used in plastics. A more recent study has bumped that up to 12,500. Both studies found that a quarter of those chemicals are known to be problematic. So either they're outright toxic or they're persistent in the environment. You probably heard a lot about these forever chemicals. There's a lot more research coming out on those. Plastics are packed with those sorts of chemicals. So when you have them floating around on the open ocean or swirling down through the water column, as they break down, as they're bombarded with UV light and heat and cold, they leach out those chemicals. And that not only poisons whatever is in the vicinity, but then the particle itself can get into a creature that might be small enough to actually choke on. We've also probably all here heard that microfibers are a major source of microplastic pollution. So 2/3 of clothing now is made out of plastic. So polyester, nylon, these sorts of things. When you do a single load of laundry, millions of these fibers can break off of the clothing and then wash out to a wastewater treatment facility. That facility, just by accident, sequesters about 90% of those microfibers in this product called sludge. Sludge is human waste that is then used as fertilizer. It's spread on fields. When winds come along, those fields dry out and it kicks up those microfibers into the atmosphere. The remaining 10% are flushed out as effluent. That goes directly into water bodies, rivers, lakes, oceans. That is why we are finding so many microfibers in particular in the environment. Think of microfibers as like a subclass of microplastics. It's plastic all the same. They're just long and thin and fibrous. Another source that I didn't really even think about until I was writing the book is that when you're driving a car for years and years, you got to replace the tires every once in a while, right? Why? Because it's abrading. These are the forces that are very good at breaking apart plastic, heat and friction. So tires used to be made out of natural rubber from the rubber tree. That is no longer the case, hasn't been since World War II. It is now a synthetic rubber. It's a variety of plastic, and it is loaded with all kinds of really gnarly chemicals. You have probably heard in recent years that there was some detective work that scientists were doing up in Washington State. They were having mass die-offs of salmon in rivers up there after the first rains. And they went back and did some analyses and found that it was the tire particles washing off of roads and into those bodies of water, leaching out a particular chemical called 6-PPD, which is highly toxic to salmon in particular and kills them outright. Follow-up studies have since found that to be the case for other species of fish as well. So this is probably a much larger problem worldwide than we know so far. I got a bone to pick with lawns in general. I find them unnecessary ecologically, in addition to they raise the temperatures in neighborhoods as well. Fake lawns are even worse because they are not absorbing water, really. They are also sometimes loaded with what you can see at top in the football, aka soccer pitch. When you want to get a nice feeling fake lawn, you load it up with these tire particles to make it spongy. You can find pictures online of this sort of black goo washing off of fake football fields into water bodies. Please do not get a fake lawn. Another sneaky one here that is very relevant to the ocean. So paint is now made largely of plastic. These are synthetic polymers that are added to give the paint the toughness. So think about all the things that are painted in contact with the ocean. So boats in particular, boats have been found to actually leave skid marks of these plastic paint particles as they're moving through the ocean. They leave a trail of them. These marine paints are obviously tougher than what we paint our house with, but they still break down over time. Hence, you have to repaint ships quite often. I'm in San Francisco. We have the Golden Gate Bridge, which famously has to be painted quite regularly because of the weather here. Where's that paint going? It is breaking into tiny pieces and falling into San Francisco Bay. I've heard of nurdles. Nurdles are, the industry calls them pellets. These are the pre-production plastics. So this is what is melted down to make a bottle or a bag. One facility makes these little nurdles, ships them to another one. To make the plastic bags or bottles. The issue there is that these things spill in extraordinary numbers. I talked to one scientist in the book who described it as, it's basically like sand, like trying to keep sand in your hand. It just falls through your fingers. When you think about a nurdle spill, there was a ship, I think 1 or 2 years ago, that caught on fire and then capsized and spilled a bunch of these flaming nurdles into the ocean, and scientists were finding them for many months afterwards washed up on beaches. Not surprisingly, it is very bad to burn plastic in that way. It just makes it all the more toxic. Here we have the fundamental issue in the oceans with microplastics and nurdles in particular, fish eggs. There are a massive number of species out there that are eating fish eggs for sustenance. So largely zooplankton, these are little tiny creatures that float around on the open ocean. With them are floating lots and lots of fish eggs. They are now mistaking those nurdles that are floating in those clouds of plankton for fish eggs, and they are choking on them. Another good study, this came out, unfortunately, just after the book came out, if I wasn't able to include it. This was a study that found a new disease in seabirds. They're calling it plasticosis. So seabird are consuming just by accident, just their daily feeding, because there's so much plastic in the ocean, they are eating a lot of synthetic particles. So they found not only the bigger particles in the stomach, but also these embedded microplastics in their organs, which gives yet more evidence for something that we have been seeing in other studies, is that when microplastics get into an organism's body, they don't just stay in the digestive system. They move through the walls of the digestive system. This is called translocation. Then they wander through the rest of the body. So what these researchers found was severe damage in the kidneys and spleen. And that indicates that microplastics can be mobilized throughout the body. And this is causing a new disease in birds called plasticosis, which is a truly sad state of affairs for planet Earth that we have created this new disease for birds. So as you might have imagined from all this, the oceans are highly contaminated with microplastics and nanoplastics. So when you hear 8,300 particles per liter of seawater is a lot, this is an extremely important thing to keep in mind when you're digesting microplastics news it's coming out more and more. Any figure you hear is probably a severe underestimate. And that is because the vast majority of microplastic studies have only been able to look down to a certain size. They're not looking at the nanoparticles. It is very difficult and very expensive to get the right equipment to do that on the nanoscale. It's possible, but not everybody has been doing it. So when you hear 8,300 particles, there are way more particles in that water in actuality. Scientists are finding that as you get smaller, the counts of the particles go up exponentially. So there have been other studies, like in the, in the Swiss Alps, where they were actually collecting the nanoplastics falling out of the sky, because this stuff is atmospheric as well. You could be standing on a spot and millions of nanoplastics would be falling on your shoulders. This is a fundamental component, not just of the oceans, but of the atmosphere now as well. And we are now finding lots and lots of plastic particles in ocean sediments. And this actually provides us a kind of a fascinating window into how this has changed throughout time. So this was actually done off the coast of Southern California. These researchers went through ocean sediments. You can drill down and take a core. When you pull up the plug, shows you year after year what was deposited. So they can go back, in this case, to the 1940s, and found that since then, the microplastic particle counts have been growing exponentially in those sediments, which means that the microplastic concentration in the oceans generally has been increasing exponentially since the 1940s. So while we were focused on reducing macroplastic pollution, so bottles and bags and that sort of thing, microplastics and nanoplastics have always been a problem. They have just flown under the radar because they have been difficult to study and overall just detect. When we're talking about microplastics and nanoplastics in the ocean, we also have to talk about this unfortunate but interesting new ecosystem on planet Earth. This has been called the plastosphere. So as these particles are moving through the environment, they're gathering up this really complex community of microbes, as you can see in these scanning electron photographs. What I find actually the most interesting here is at lower left, it looks like a lollipop. There's an inset image there. That is bacteria probably growing on that other organism. So it's organisms upon organisms, all forming this really interesting community that changes over time. So as a microplastic comes out of a wastewater treatment facility, it has a obviously human-centric gathering of microbes. As it moves through the oceans, others come and colonize it as well. Those are probably some sort of bacteria that are digesting the plastic. So it's a super complex community that unfortunately does contain a lot of human pathogens, scientists have been finding. This is not just staying in the oceans either, by the way. Other scientists have found that As bubbles come up from the ocean, they gather a bunch of organic material, so like bacteria and viruses that are naturally in the ocean, but they're all NASA gathering up microplastics as they're coming to the surface. So when they do, they pop and they fling that gathered material into the air that then blows onto land as a sea breeze. So when you are breathing in ocean air, you are breathing in microplastics that have been traveling around the oceans. Likely microplastics that started in a washing machine, washed to a wastewater treatment facility where they were mixed with all kinds of other human waste, and then eventually flushed out to sea. Also, this stuff is now fully atmospheric. I, for the book, went to a remote mountaintop in Utah with a scientist who has this instrument. These are buckets. When it is raining, one bucket is open and gathers the stuff that's falling out of the atmosphere that way. It's a kind of a lid. When it's dry, it flips over and collects what is falling out of dry air. So you can now get a handle on how much microplastic is in the atmosphere. So she has a bunch of these instruments situated throughout the remote American West, far away from human cities. She was able to gather them up and then scale that up to how much might be blowing on the United States as a whole. It is the equivalent of billions of bottles of plastic falling on the United States each year as microplastic. Like, again, to be very clear, that's an underestimate because it's not considering nanoplastics. And this other one mentioned here that I already talked about in the remote Alps, 19 billion nanoplastics, billion with a B, deposited per square foot of snow every week. The stuff is not just fully atmospheric, but fully a component of our atmosphere now. So that means that it is blowing all around the world. You can ask any microplastic scientist, is there any place left on the planet that is untouched by microplastics? And they will tell you no. It is all contaminated. They're fighting in Antarctica and in the Arctic. You can be an uncontacted tribe in South America and microplastics are falling on your head. So we have this sort of microplastic cycle come into view. So you also have soil emissions, that is from the microplastics that have been spread with the sludge onto our fields, but also landfills as well. You see this really interesting, I think, figure, 84% coming from road and braking emissions. That is not necessarily, that's separate from the urban centers here that she figures only accounts for 0.4% of the microplastics flying into the atmosphere. Why is that? It's actually kind of fascinating. When you are driving in a city, there is a lower speed limit. But when you're outside of a city on these open highways, 65 miles per hour or 70 miles per hour, whatever the case may be, that provides energy to actually fling those tire particles that we talked about way up into the atmosphere. In cities, you just don't get as much of that energy flinging the microplastics into the sky. Cities are absolutely loaded with microplastics. When you're walking down city streets, you are breathing a lot of microplastic, but at least this modeling shows that a lot of those microplastics are probably staying local and not taking to the air. It really doesn't hold a candle to what we have indoors. Most studies are seemingly agreeing that indoor air is something like 6 times more contaminated than outdoor air. By one scientist reckoning, we inhale something like 7,000 microplastics a day. That is, again, a massive underestimate because it's not including nanoplastics, which are, again, exponentially more numerous in any sort of environment than microplastics are. In a typical living room, you are depositing hundreds of thousands of particles a day. That is because our clothing, so much of it is made out of plastic now. One study found that just by walking around in your clothing, you shed 1 billion microfibers a year just from one person. If you have 4 people living in a house, we spend around 90% of our time indoors. That is a lot of microfibers. Landing on the floor, when you walk around, you kick up that dust and then inhale it. But then that's to say nothing of all the other stuff around us. Carpeting is made out of plastic. Chairs, sofas, in addition to all the plastic products around us, plastic bags from the kitchen, that sort of thing. We fully surrounded ourselves with it, and that is why indoor air is supremely contaminated with microplastics. And then just to kind of bring things together here, I wanted to, graphs are inherently boring, but these ones are interesting, I promise. Charting here the exponential rise in the production of plastic since the 1950s. Really, it wasn't until World War II that plastic started being produced in large quantities and really took off afterwards. So here in the black line that goes dotted, that is the waste generated, plastic waste generated. The unfortunate blue line down at bottom is how much plastic has been recycled. So at the moment, it is probably around 5% of plastic in the United States is actually being recycled. Recycling is an abject failure in its current state. I would love for it to have actually worked, but because it's based on a model of profit, it is much cheaper to produce virgin plastic than it is to just go through the effort in recycling the stuff. That is, it's just a busted model that should have never been set up that way. We need recycling on a big scale, but first and foremost, we need to just reduce the amount of plastic that we're producing in the first place. Returning to that study of the sediments off the coast of Southern California, here is that exponential rise in the contamination of those sediments charted over time. And mapped perfectly over that is the production of plastic. The more plastic we produce in exponential form, the more exponentially contaminated the environment gets. The reality of the matter is that by 2050 or 2060, the plastics industry is going to triple production of plastic. We are currently producing 1 trillion pounds of plastic a year. So that's 3 trillion pounds in the coming decades. And the planet is just incapable of handling that sort of load. And just the last graph here, this is mapping yet another layer of data. So the sediment that we just talked about is in the dotted gray line. The production of plastic is in red. Those yellow triangles are from another study here that went back through museum fish specimens and got permission to dissect them and pick out all the microplastic particles they found. Here, charted again pretty well with the exponential production of plastic and the exponential contamination of sediments off the Southern California coast is the exponential contamination of fishes. These are freshwater fishes, by the way, taken from the Great Lakes. It's just another layer of evidence that we cannot keep producing plastic at this scale if we want a livable planet Earth, in the layering on top of the climate change that is just like shaking all these ecosystems to pieces. All right, that's a lot, I know. And I want to talk about solutions because there are many. It's a daunting problem because of all of these sources of plastic that we just talked about. It is coming from a lot of places. So very quickly here, up at the top left is a special filter you can get for your washing machine, which captures, I believe they say, 90% of the microfibers coming out of your washing machine. I have not independently verified that, but you replace this filter every once in a while, ship it back to the company. They then turn those microfibers into building insulation. So it's a way to kind of trap those microfibers as permanently as possible. Not a perfect system because you are using up carbon emissions by having them ship the filters to you and shipping them back. But it's the beginnings of a sort of system that we're going to have here going forward, that ideally we mandate that all washing machines have these filters built in. It should not be our responsibility as consumers to slap these filters on our washing machines. One of my favorite technologies in the universe is the Humble Rain Garden. So this is a very simple roadside ecosystem, a bit of greenery that does so many things beneficial for a city landscape at once. Reduces air temperatures because those plants are producing water vapor that cools the landscape. It provides ecosystem services. It attracts native pollinators, reduces floodwaters, And then scientists are now finding that it also captures something like 85-90% of the tire particles that are flushing from roadsides into these rain gardens. So it's kind of a natural way for us to keep those particles from eventually flushing to a river and then eventually into the ocean. And then even farther upstream, we can go here at lower right, is a device that's under development by this startup called the Tire Collective. I believe they're based in the UK. This slaps on the back of a wheel and collects those particles that are flying off of it into this little cartridge. And they're thinking that maybe one day you go get your car's oil changed. I mean, ideally, we're all driving EVs by that point. But like they switch out your air filter, they would switch out your microplastic filters from your tires. You're collecting it closer to the source. And then finally, my favorite piece of technology of all time. This is Mr. Trash Wheel. You're probably familiar. He's famous. He's a barge in Baltimore Harbor, at least originally. They've been spreading around the world. This is a very simple technology. There's kind of this boom that stretches out into the mouth of the river, collects floating plastics. Mr. Trash Wheel gobbles them up, and then you cart them away, ideally to recycle them. So we should have these in every river on the planet, quite honestly. You are not catching the stuff that is floating below the surface, including a lot of the microplastic, but it is going a long way from keeping those macroplastics, the bottles and the bags, from escaping into the ocean and then eventually becoming microplastics and nanoplastics. And then just like, again, not to sound like a broken record, we got to stop with all this plastic. It's madness that we are single use wrapping cucumbers, which have their own skins. Why? I just don't find that particularly necessary. Just to reiterate, the exponential rise in the production of plastic is directly responsible for the exponential rise in the microplastic contamination in the environment. This is why it is so important that we make progress on an international UN treaty, which is currently under negotiations, which, if you can believe it, the United States, among other nations, is trying to water down because of their plastics industries. But we need a mandatory global cap on the production of plastic, because plastics activists and plastic scientists roundly agree that is the only way out of the mess. The other things that I mentioned, the cute little technologies, are going to help, but not on their own. If we keep producing the same amount of plastic, it's not going to do much good at all.
That was Matt Simon. He has been a science journalist at Wired magazine for 9 years. Matt Simon is the author of a book subtitled How Microplastics Corrupted Our Planet and Our Bodies. He spoke to members of the Surfrider Foundation on January 23rd, 2024. You can watch Matt Simon's full-length presentation on YouTube under the title Microplastics, a Poison Like No Other, event with special guest Matt Simon. You can hear this program again for free on TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. My name is Maria Gelarden. Thank you for listening.